You're listening to a live call-in forum with assembly candidates over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. It's 28 minutes after 7 o'clock. We're taking your calls tonight. I have a list of questions, too, but more interested in what you all out there in the public have to ask our assembly candidates. And I've got a caller on the line right now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Good evening. And thank you to everyone who is trying to run for assembly and trying to make a difference in our community. It's really awesome. My question this evening pertains to a very, very deep spot in my heart, and it's something that's very easy to do. Both my family, my father and my mother and my in-laws here in town, we all recycle. And at first I thought it was kind of cheesy to, you know, put your paper in a paper bag and put your cans in a can bag, but now that we do it, I have eliminated my trash to just a little 35 gallon trash can. So my question to future assembly members is, how do you feel about mandatory recycling citywide, and what are you going to do to help set that in motion? Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your call. Heidi Raffelli.
Oh, well, you know, I'm a family of 11, and so we had three large trash cans outside our home. And because we've gone to recycling, we're now down to one. So can you imagine a family as large as mine filling up one can versus three cans? I mean, it has changed the direction of our family's lives. I mean, we literally recycle everything we can. As a city, I would support mandated recycling. However, I would need to see a plan that, you know, we could afford and that was reasonable on our citizens. So one way to do that is take a look at what other communities in Southeast are doing or across the state. Also, we need to talk with our sanitation company that we work with and see what, you know, they have in mind to set up. But, yeah, my whole life has changed because of recycling.
All right. Heidi Raffelli, Mitch McGraw. Mandatory recycling in Sitka.
I'm all for recycling. Mandatory recycling is kind of like, I think it would be a good thing if it would work, but it's like mandatory keeping your barrel out of your garbage can. It's impossible to make it work. So mandatory, I'd have to say, probably not possible, but encouragement, I think, would be a great thing.
All right. Joseph?
I agree with Mitch on that point as, making it mandatory, the enforcement would be the problem. What I like to try to do, if it's cost-effective, and I've seen this working out in communities and a lot down south, is roadside pickup. Mm-hmm. I think if we can do roadside pickup, a lot more people recycle. I really do.
Yeah, I've heard it discussed. I think it's on the radar. Larry, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Joe hit that right on the head there. Is, you know, to mandate something is really hard to do. Implementing it is almost impossible. But you got to make it as easy as possible for those who want to do it. You know, I do it. I use a trash compactor, and I take my garbage out like every other week. And actually, today I forgot. But I've got a whole other week to go. And because it helps you. You know, I recycle my cans, cardboard. Having a store, you know, I used to have cardboard that just I was paying $300-$400 a month just to get rid of my cardboard. And now having the recycle, that's saved me lots of money. And I think, like I say, back to the mandate, no, I don't think that's it. But just make it easier for people.
All right. Thanks, Larry Cruz. Phyllis Hackett, Island Dweller.
Yeah, Island Dweller, and we haul our recyclables off. We've been sorting them ever since it's been available here. I've been a proponent of recycling since the 70s, back in college when we recycled then, so it's certainly not a new concept. It's done all over the world, and I think that it's a good thing we finally caught up with it. I think mandatory recycling is a great thing to aim for, and I think if it's made accessible, as Joe says, and we can fit roadside pickup in there, I think we can get real close. You know, enforcement, I don't know if enforcement is difficult, challenging, impossible, but I think if roadside pickup's there, we'll have a good shot at people participating pretty fully.
All right. Thank you, Phyllis. Everybody got to go at that one. We're doing well. Hi, we have another caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to thank Rob and the candidates for this great opportunity. My question to the candidates is what criteria would each of them use other than a mandate in the city code to return difficult decisions back to the voters rather than having the assembly wrestle through those themselves and make the decision.
I wonder if you could be specific. Can you give a specific example that we could hang this question on?
Was a great example where I felt it was fairly clearly a public safety issue, which should have been adjudicated by the assembly, and yet there was a great bit of discussion about returning that back to the voters.
Okay, well, that's sort of the image that popped up in my mind. I wanted to make sure that we didn't get off on a tangent. So thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
All right. I do recall at the assembly table someone saying that this issue, we're having a hard time deciding it here, so we ought to put it out for a vote. And I think that was sort of the essence of this question. Is that the appropriate thing for the assembly to do? When a decision can't be made at the assembly table, does it mean we go out to the public, or does the assembly just kind of have to rally and try and reach consensus on what is in the best interest of the public or public safety or what? I don't mean to pick anybody, but we haven't started with you in a while.
Larry, I think Cruz. That's almost on an individual basis. You know, you have to look at each situation. And I think the assembly should rally and work towards coming up with some kind of consensus as to what they're going to do and solve the problem. I think most times that things go to the vote of the people or are something that's initiated by the people. And that shouldn't be something that the assembly put forth.
Okay. Phyllis?
Well, that's kind of a tough question. I think public education is really critical and important, and in issues that appear to be pretty divisive and contentious, I think maybe more effort can be put on educating the public so everybody starts with the same basis. And hopefully the public can get back to their assembly members and via email or some route where we can all get the same information. And it seems to me some of those decisions should just be made by the assembly and bite the bullet and do it. If it's not committing large amounts of tax dollars or committing precious, unique land parcels or something along those lines.
Okay, so you would set criteria for
that
kind of decision.
I would think.
What about you, Joseph?
I think it would depend on the issue. Because the reason that the way I look at it, it's like some votes are 4-3. It's because you've got some assembly members have people talking to them, and they're all for something, yet you have another assembly member talking to other people, and they're giving them just the opposite opinion. So that tells me right there that pretty much the public's undecided. And I think it just depends on the issue whether we should say, well, let's do this because, you know, the majority votes here at the table, or if it's something really important and really has to do with lots and lots of money. I think it'd be nice, even if it's just an advisory vote, just to get a rough idea what the community thinks as a whole.
All right. Yeah, that's an interesting point. When the public is undecided, what does that mean? Mitch McGraw, when does the assembly settle something and when does it go out to a vote?
I think personally that everybody votes assembly in to do a job. And the assembly is there to vote on everything that comes before them. And I think that if someone wants something brought up to be vote like it has been in the past, they get their however many signatures they need and they bring it to the assembly and then it goes into the next ballot. I think that's an appropriate way to do it. They elect people because they approve of them and they think they can do the job that they want them to do. So I think that they ultimately already have made a choice by electing the assembly.
All right. Mitch McGraw, Heidi Raffelli, your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, assemblies put forth initiatives to ballot all the time, you know, bonds and other taxes and issues and things like that. So assemblies put forth things to their citizens to vote on all the time, even though we are elected. Now, the reality with the roundabout was that wasn't our community's effort. Our community did not come forth and say, you know what we need? We need a roundabout. And that was a state agency's idea. And they brought that to Sitka. Sitkins did not go seeking that opportunity. And over the course of a 2-year period, the majority of the assembly some of them, current members, voting five times against it, could not come to consensus. And there were multiple people on the assembly during that time. And when you have assembly members changing seats, you know, and you have some coming on and some coming off, you then tilt your vote. And so for me, it was a very simple thing. Since the citizens didn't seek it, the assembly didn't seek it, a state agency offered it, no one could resolve it consistently. You know, it was not a fully supported project. That's the perfect time to go ahead and seek public opinion. It was a two-year debate. And so when you're at in a quagmire and you're stuck, and it's not life-threatening, and this one is not, I saw no reason for it to go back to the public.
All right.
It just didn't make it that way.
Thanks, Heidi. We have another caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to ask a follow-up question along these same lines. There hasn't been any mention in this recent discussion of the possible role of boards and commissions in forging some kind of middle ground with respect to providing information and advice to the assembly before the assembly moves toward a ballot initiative.
All right. Thanks for your call. This was on my list too, Mitch. Boards and commissions. It seems like boards and commissions could be saving the assembly work. But on the other hand, there's this accountability issue that has been brought up at the assembly table, that the buck sort of stops there. And how do you most effectively use your board members and commissioners?
Well, in my opinion, boards and commissions and staff are advisory in nature, and assembly are valuable resource. So the assembly needs to take everything that boards and commissions says to them seriously, not just say, oh, they said it to us, let's just do away with it. I think they need to work with them very, very, very actively.
Okay. Phyllis?
I agree with Mitch, and I think the boards and commissions can be great tools for the assembly and need to be. I think that they have been in the past, and I don't think that they have been used as effectively in recent years as they should, and I think that's evidenced by the fact that there's so many boards and commissions that need people on them, and I don't remember seeing that in years past. So I think that they need to be listened to, highly regarded, and their information has to be taken very seriously, and we need to be a little more respectful and inclusive. And
all right. Phyllis, thank you. Larry?
Yeah, the boards and commission, they need to be listened to. But something that happens with those is they live in a very, a lot of times in a very niche criteria. Like, for example, like I'm a planning and zoning. I have to look at things from a very ordinance-based view, and then make my decisions on that. Now, some of that goes back to the assembly, and the assembly can make decisions outside of that realm, and they're allowed to. And so sometimes you'll see decisions made that they overchange because of they have that ability, or they get to look at other things that we don't. And so they do need to take us for what we are and listen to it. But at the same time, they have the right to do what they can do.
All right. Thank you, Larry. Heidi?
Yeah, and to piggyback that, you know, not only do we have to, you know, take a look at the information coming from those various boards and commissions, but we do have to think about the whole community in a larger perspective. And so sometimes we just can't go with the suggestion of a board or a commission. However, that being said, it doesn't mean that because we didn't go with the suggestion of a board and commission that we don't appreciate what they did. The work that they do is incredible. And those members on both boards, commissions, task forces, committees, it's volumes of hours. It's countless hours. And it's a way that everyone can jump into government right away and help. I think the assembly has heard loud and clear, that they have not been as open and as friendly and as respectful as maybe they could be. And I hope that my personal behavior towards boards and commission members is not seen in a negative light, because I, I deeply appreciate what they do.
Well, I think someone was mentioning, it might have been Larry, that since the since liaisons were the practice of liaison was sort of, I guess, abandoned, we've lost that sense of subcommittee happening with boards and commissions. But anyway, I'm interjecting. Joseph?
I think boards and commissions are important. I myself have been a member of the Police and Fire Commission for the last 2 years, and I see what work goes into it. And Heidi's right, where sometimes we can't always go with their decision. I think that's where communication comes in. If there's a valid reason why we can't go with the board and commission recommendations, we need to tell them publicly, says, okay, this is good job, but here's the problem we're having. They need to be, I forgot what else I was going to say, but there's a perception out there that they aren't listening. And the reason I say that, it shows is all you got to do is look in the paper under where they're looking for volunteers for the commissions. It's lengthy, and it's been there for a while. I know myself that we were one person short on our commission for almost a year before somebody even applied.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, there. I think it was last night's paper. Friday's paper. There was four or five commissions looking for members, and some of them been up just about a year waiting for them because people don't want to. You could, like I said, the perception's out there that they're not listened to, so people don't want to do these commissions.
Joseph, you think your time on the Police and Fire Commission is well-spent time?
Very well-spent. I've actually learned a lot.
All right. Thank you. We've got another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you very much, and thank you to all the candidates for running for Assembly. My question is this. How do you balance the views of persons who contact you individually with those who vocalize their priorities at your Assembly meetings in conjunction with your own personal feelings toward the agenda items? A lot of times I have found that sometimes large groups who come towards the Assembly, that tends to send the Assembly in the opposite direction of how these groups feel. So I guess I'm asking these Assembly candidates how they feel about this.
Interesting. Thank you for your call.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Bye.
Phyllis Hackett, how do you catch a cloud and pin it down?
Well said. I like to hear from everybody, and I've heard an awful lot of interesting things, comments, and ideas since I've started this campaign trail. I think that there's a couple of good, solid venues and ways that people approach government bodies, and I am in favor of the public way. I'm in favor of people coming to the Assembly and asking things of the Assembly in public. We can talk to people on the street, and they can tell us one idea, and that's fine. But I think it's important for the body of the Assembly to all have the same information to be able to analyze it effectively, and to sit there and say, you know, three or four people came and told me this. It just isn't quite as valid. I think we've got ways that people can comment. There's emails where email can be sent to all the Assembly members at one time. I think that's very effective. But I like the public approach. I think the whole community has a right to know what's being said out there. And yeah. I like it when people stand behind what they say.
All right. Thanks, fellas. Larry?
Excuse me. I agree there. Part of the things that I would say is I don't like to be bogged down by one person or one small group. What I a lot of times do is I'll call around. I ask people. If there's an issue, I physically go out and look for people. I'll walk the street, you know, and gone into stores, gone and talked to people in the street on things like this. Because that way there you're getting, to me, it's an unbiased view. Because some of these people don't even know the issues. And you ask them, and then they'll explain things to you. And that, I think, is a great way of doing it, is getting out there and seeing the public, making phone calls, and not being bogged down by, like, say, one specific little group that wanted to get their point across.
Yeah, interesting. One of the more interesting observations I've heard our current mayor note, it might have been during the roundabout thing, is that you tend to get calls from people whose opinion you agree with, which you would think it would be the opposite. I thought that was an interesting observation. Is that your experience, Heidi?
It is and it isn't. Depends on the topic.
Yeah.
You know, with the roundabout, I heard from, over 100... 25, 30, 40 people. I can't even remember now. And it was varied. But overwhelmingly, it was what caused me to make my decision, because I was a neutral. I had a neutral perspective about it. So in that particular case, I went with the overwhelming consensus of the people. But I really like to hear from everybody, whether it's email, phone call, stop me on the street, you know, a drive-by conversation when I'm in the coffee shop. I really like to hear from that. But when what Phyllis said rings very true, when we at the assembly table all have the same information to go by, that's also very helpful. So making our decisions is not just about our opinion. It's about hearing from everyone and then getting the literature at the table, the research that can be provided to us equally. And that allows us to make a decision that we can live with and that we think our, you know, community can benefit by.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm remembering it exactly right, but I do recall your remarks about the what you had heard from constituent calls and mm-hmm. so on regarding the roundabout. But
yeah.
At the meetings themselves, there was a lot of it seems like the preponderance of testimony was in favor of the roundabout.
Yes.
And that might have been sort of at the a component of this caller's question. How do you balance what you hear in person versus what you hear at meetings,
right.
And how do you weigh all that stuff, Mitch?
Well, I would be, if I heard someone on the street and then I heard a bunch of people talking there, I'd just go do my homework and see what's best. You know, as far as the roundabout came, you know, it probably would have been best for SICA to have it. However, they voted it down. No one has many people. How many people from SICA have actually seen a roundabout and seen it work? You know, so I would say, you know, homework is the biggest thing. You can have one person say something on the street, one person call you, 10 people come to the assembly. Well, they all voted you into the assembly. You just need to do your homework and do what you feel is best for the community. So I think you're speaking for the community rather than just for one person.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. Joseph?
I agree with what Mitch said, but I'd like to take it a step further. I would give just as much credence to the person on the street talking to me as I would if they come to the assembly table. And the reason I say that, a lot of people just aren't good public speakers. And I can tell you from experience, the very first time I came to the assembly to speak on an issue, I was overwhelmed. I mean, it was new for me. I'm not a very good public speaker. And just sitting there and having all the assembly members staring at you so they can hear what you say, it's kind of overwhelming. And just some people just can't do it. So I would definitely take credence to people coming to me off the street because it's more personable. They feel more comfortable. And like Mitch said, then after I get what everybody said, I'll do my homework and find out what the facts are. But I would definitely give credence to the person on the street as well as who comes to the meetings.
All right. Thanks, Joseph. Joseph Reeves. The number to call here is 747-5877. I've got our five municipal assembly candidates in the studio. We'd sure like to hear from you. I have some email questions. Might as well tackle some of these. Heidi, what is your opinion on the Silver Bay Seafoods deal and how it came about?
Well, you know, I joined the assembly at the tail end of that. So I can't tell you a lot of what happened before January. But I can tell you that when you're looking at multiple engineer reports that talk about, you know, a dock that's in danger and a dock that could fall, and we've had docks fall in Southeast that have led to tragedy, and you look at the city responsibility for that, and you also look at the fact that a previous assembly signed a 55-year lease and not wanting to go through the litigation of breaking that lease, then you have to make a decision between, you know, imperfect, difficult choices. And for me, taking the responsibility of the city out of that situation was what I thought best that we could do. We certainly didn't have the $10 to $40 million that had been quoted to us to repair or rebuild the dock. And thankfully now I look at it and I think it was a painful decision. It was very difficult for me. But we do have a business operating down there that's going to generate income for us and do more, I think, for that property in the long run. Was it a perfect situation? Absolutely not. Did I have any control over it prior to me sitting at the seat? No. And so I just had to take a look at what I could do at that moment in time, and I made the best decision that I could, and I'm glad that I did. You know, I could live with my decision.
Okay, thanks, Heidi. Joseph, what do you think about the Silver Bay Seafoods deal?
I think it was a tough one. It really was. I mean, there was issues on both sides of the table, you know, a lot of bad feelings. But like what Heidi said, you know, there was a safety issue. There was a possible lawsuit issue if something happened. And to get out from under something like that, I think, was a good move.
Larry?
I think it was a good decision that was done based on both of these guys saying what they have said. You know, it's that whole area out there should be eventually privatized. And quite frankly, I don't think we would have been in this situation if we would have followed through with years ago when First Pulp Mill was turned over, that, you know, that was going to be up for, that could have been up for sale and sold at then. And we wouldn't be in the situation as we are right now.
All right. Mitch, Silver Bay Seafoods.
I'm a supporter of the dock, obviously. You know, the dock was deteriorating, so what you look at is the city had nothing valuable there. They did give them the money. Silver Bay Seafoods is a fishing conglomeration, so they're going to, you know, that's a mainstay for Sitka. They're going to make it. They got some very smart people running the Silver Bay Seafoods. They gave them $1 million. They got, you know, they got to put $2 million more into it, or, you know, what the city gets back. So if they put a $999,000 back into it, and they fail, the city's got a dock that's been improved that much. They have nothing to lose by it. And they've given so much to other companies that are out at the Samo Cove site that they had nothing to lose. They can't tell one company yes and keep bailing one company out, and then come tell a company that's going to prosper. Absolutely not. I think it would have been a total wrong decision, so I'm 100% supportive of Silver Bay Seafoods.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. Phyllis, Silver Bay Seafoods?
I'm really neither here nor there with the decision, because I think that it was very confusing, and I really don't feel like I have enough information to say yay or nay on the actual outcome. I think the problem with Silver Bay Seafoods came from a lack of public process, and I think that it's a very valuable piece of property, and I think it would have been a good move for the city and the Sawmill Cove Board to really initiate a pretty substantial public process so that people could really understand what was going on, because I think a lot of the hardship grew out of people not really understanding it. And had that been done, I think it would have been a lot easier decision and a lot smoother in the outcome and a lot less heartache over it.
Okay, thanks, Phyllis. We've got another call. Thanks for your patience. You're on the air.
No problem. Hey, first of all, God bless each and every one of you for being willing to submit to serve there. This Thursday, the FAA is having a hearing on the environmental impact statement to expand the airport and do some modifications out there. And the Juneau Airport has a trail around it for pedestrian and service vehicles to get around the airport and go over around the runway. Anyway, I'm wondering what your opinion is and if the city should weigh in on the idea of incorporating pedestrian, bicycle, and service vehicle access to the new park on the other side of the runway, the Causeway Fort Rousseau State Park out there, if the design should be modified to incorporate that type of access.
All right. Thank you for your call.
Okay.
All right. Well, I don't think I could need to restate it. Pedestrian bicycle access out to the causeway, to the Fort Rousseau Causeway State Historic Park.
I agree.
Larry?
There definitely has to be that. That's something. I mean, I've lived here, like I say, 27 years. I've never been out there. You know, it's, you know, to go out and park, I've made attempts at it, but I've never done it. And years ago, that you used to be able to cross over the runway. But, you know, I never did that one either. But there needs to be an ability for people to get out there and have a bike path and have a walkway out there.
All right. Mitch, what do you think about that?
I think there is, as long as they take the safety into effect. You know, we're totally different community than Juneau. Juneau's got a huge flats. They have room to come around the end of the airport. We may not. And these 737s come in, and they're coming in over the water. They think they got nothing short. You know, they got to be able to land when they can land. And if it's endangering people, I would have to say no, but if they can find a safe way to do it, I would say absolutely yes. So I'm not in the middle of the road. I'm just saying that if it can't be done safely, then there's no reason to do it, because we don't need to see the jet wreck or people get killed.
Okay. Mitch McGraw, Heidi Raffelli.
Yes, we need to investigate ways to get folks out there. I think it's just a wonderful opportunity, and I'm sure that there's a safe way that we can do it. I don't want to rush into it. I want to investigate all our options, but clearly that would be, seems like quite a reasonable thing to do.
All right. Thanks, Heidi. Joseph.
Yeah, I think if they, like Mitch said, if we can do it safely, we should do it. Also, like, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but with all the terrorist things and the security issues, I'd like to find out if it's even a viable thing to do. You know, would FAA allow people that close to the runway with all this FAA regulations that they got now, you know, at airports and stuff? So we need to look at that as well.
Okay. Thanks, Joseph. Phyllis?
It's a wonderful recreation area out there, great opportunity for us in a lot of ways, and I think it ought to be explored and definitely ought to participate in encouraging the exploration and finding a way to get there.
All right. We're down. This hour has flown by, and I want to thank everybody who's called in tonight.